Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Hitchcock with the estate and asset protection planning firm Barth Calderon, and welcome to Wealth Protector TV. And some of you may be listening to this on Wealth Protector Radio. Really, really excited today to have Jeff Hayden on the show. Jeff, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Glad to be here, Paul.
Thanks so much. And so, yeah, this is the first time Jeff and I are talking, and many of you listening or watching this may know Jeff from LinkedIn. He's an influencer on LinkedIn, is how I got to know him, and reading his stuff, publishes a lot of great stuff. So Jeff, first thing I want to know is a little bit about your background for those who are kind of meeting you for the first time.
Wow. I worked in manufacturing for 20 years, and to be honest, got tired of leading people. There is a burnout factor that goes with that, I think, and decided I wanted to do something else and decided that I wanted to write, but I had never written before. So I, like many people in your audience, I bet on myself and took the plunge. And so it took me a long time to build that up, but now I'm a contributing editor for Inc. magazine. As you said, I write for LinkedIn, and I'm also a ghostwriter, so I write a lot of stuff that other people put their names on. So I'm like the contractor that builds your house. You have the blueprints, but he builds the house, and you get to live in it.
Well, I was going to ask you because, I mean, looking at your background, the ghostwriting, how does that work? I mean, somebody gives you a topic and you have to go out and research that topic, or are you just kind of, you know, busting things out constantly?
Early on, it was whatever I could get my hands on, because, you know, when you start a business, you can't be particularly selective because revenue is revenue. Right. But slowly, my wheelhouse is business management, leadership, entrepreneurship, mostly because that's what I did for 20 years. So when I talk to people who need something, they don't have to explain a lot to me. We can talk in shorthand, because if it's a leadership book, well, you know, I had 350 people that reported to me at one time. So I understand the gig. My particular niche is successful people who have an audience, can market a book or can market whatever they have, but they don't have the time to actually write it. So they can just give me very high level overview of here's what I want to say. And then I go off and take care of that. So they have minimal input, and that's what they want, you know, and then they look at it later. So I do some research and I do some educating of myself, but a lot of it is experience and, you know, talking to people like you and getting ideas that way.
Right, right. And I also noticed that you had some Amazon bestsellers in your history there.
Yeah, but you know, the ghostwriting is like Fight Club. First rule of Fight Club is you can't talk about Fight Club. And first rule of ghostwriting is you can't talk about your clients or your actual work. So I can be really general, but I can't be specific, because I'm convinced that in some of my non-disclosure agreements, my kids are tied up in there somewhere as surety. I wouldn't be surprised. But the cool thing about ghostwriting, if I was going to sum it up, is that I get paid to learn about stuff.
Right. No, awesome.
You can't beat that.
Yeah. No, fantastic. Now, talking about writing books, so motivation myth, you've got a new book out. What is that book all about, and what was the inspiration for it? If that sounds like a dumb question, but no, how did you get into writing that book?
No, it's a great question. An agent finally convinced me that I had a platform where people would want to read something that I wrote that actually had my name on it. And then the idea for it came from one of the cool things also about my job, especially with Inc., is that I get to talk to really successful people, like incredibly successful people, which I find to be really fun. But I was sitting with, the perfect example is Kirk Hammett, the Metallica guitarist. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been around 40 years, sold 100 million albums, big band. And I was sitting with him, and he was talking about how his journey, basically. And it struck me that at no moment did he ever talk about this burst of like inspiration or this passion that he found, or this, you know, huge lightning bolt of motivation that carried him throughout his whole career. And then I thought, everybody else that I've talked to that's really successful, none of them have that story. But if I contrast that to lots of other people who will ask me about, you know, how can I achieve things? How can I reach my dreams? Every one of them is waiting for that lightning bolt. So you've got the incredibly successful people who don't, and then you've got the people who are sitting and waiting and it never hits them. And I thought, well, there's obviously a gap here. And the gap is that motivation isn't something that just comes over you or that you find one day. Motivation is something you create by figuring out what you want to do, creating a process that will actually get you there, not something that you want to do or you think is fun to do, but what will actually get you where you want to go, and then working your process and every day completing those little steps, feeling good about the little steps, that gives you motivation to go to the next day. And it becomes this virtuous cycle of effort, achievement, fulfillment and happiness, motivation, and you keep rolling. And so the journey can be tons of little doses of motivation that will carry you a long way, as opposed to that, I have to find my passion, I have to find this big lightning bolt that will take me my entire journey.
Is it fair to say that the people who are waiting around for that lightning bolt are the ones that just, you know, never really, you know, take that next step and you know, achieve what they might not otherwise think they could do because they're waiting around for it?
I would say in large part that is correct.
Yeah.
Because if you're waiting for that, I don't know that it ever hit. Maybe there are a few fortunate people who, when they're 12, find their life's calling. I don't know any of them. I don't know if you know anybody like that, but I don't know anybody like that. The people that I know that have done really well have decided they wanted to try something, given it some effort, and given it enough effort to get past that first few days where you feel really dorky because you're terrible at it, and you look at the distance between here, which is where you're starting, and there, which is where you want to be, and you go, oh my gosh, how will I ever bridge that?
Yeah.
Get through that first little initial period and get to the place where you can realize, hey, I got a little better at this, you know, and that feels good. Whatever it may be, you can actually learn to love lots of different things, and you can actually find a passion through effort as opposed to sitting around and saying, oh, wow, this is what I'm called to do. You can have a number of different callings if you choose to try.
So you got this motivation to write this book, and I want to get into in a minute to what's in the book and who the book is for. But I'm always curious, when you're writing a book, what are you doing all day? I mean, are you sitting there all day long and just typing on your computer for a month? I mean, how are you actually writing the book?
Well, I don't have the luxury of just doing that for a month. I'm like you and everybody that is listening. You know, you might have your most important thing, but there's all those other things that you have to do as well. But I just followed the same basic process. I said, okay, here's where I am. Here's where I need to be. What's involved in the middle, I broke it down into chunks. I can't say that I always perfectly followed my chunks in my timeline. Sometimes I got ahead, sometimes I got behind. But it's put your head down and just set out to accomplish whatever it is that you decided that day you want to accomplish. And the cool thing about that is I think there's a happiness factor that comes with that. You know, we like to think that, you know, if you get a bigger house, you're going to be happier. If you get a new car, and statistics show that the new house fund lasts about a month. You know, there's other research that shows if you make more than $70,000 a year, the extra money doesn't make you any happier. So there's all that stuff. But if you have a plan for today and you work hard and you accomplish whatever it was you set out to accomplish, you always feel good about yourself at the end of the day. There's that moment where you go,
right,
yes, yeah, I had a good day. And so if you have a plan that's going to get you to where you want to be, and you work that plan, and every day you get to go, yep, I did what I set out to do, that not only gives you the motivation side, but it also makes you a happier person. And it's, I know it's a cliche, but that whole journey is more important than the destination part. If you do it right, you can actually make the journey more important than the destination, which is really cool.
Yep. No, I love it. Love it. Great insight. So motivation myth, who's the audience for the book, and what's the book about?
The audience is anyone who thinks that there is more that they could do than they are doing, or that has something they want to achieve, whether it's personal or professional, that they haven't achieved, or whether it's somebody in their life that looks stuck and could use that. And to sum up the book, it's basically, the first part is, hey, here's this premise of get over the waiting for motivation. You can go create your own, and here's how to do it. And then the rest of the book is specific strategies that are actually practical and real world ways that if you have a goal, here's a blueprint for how you can achieve it. And I've got four or five of them that you can apply in different ways. So it's, you know, it would be terrible if all I did was give you the theory that you can create your own daily doses of motivation, because, okay, that sounds great, but what do you do with it? So the rest of it is, here's how you can actually do that. Because if you don't have a plan to create your daily doses, well, then what good is the theory to you?
Yeah.
Which is what you do. You may tell people a principle, but then you've create blueprints and plans for them to actually achieve that.
Right. A great analogy. And so, but what's the myth part of motivation myth? What's the myth part?
The biggest myth is that it's something that you receive somehow from outside, as opposed to something that you can create on your own. So anybody that looks at you or looks at me and says, you know, I just can't find the motivation, well, stop looking and start making it.
Right. Yeah.
And if you do it right, you don't actually need any motivation, because it will come to you through your effort.
Well, so it's interesting, because when you start talking about motivation, or I talk about motivation with anybody, you know, you always think of Tony Robbins and these, you know, motivating people by walking on hot coals, and you get this, you know, burst of motivation at, you know, one of his $4,000 seminars on the weekend, all of a sudden, you know, you're going to go conquer the world. You're not talking about that sort of.
No, I love Tony. I do take a couple shots at him in my book, I must admit, but love Tony. But that idea that one moment can be so transformative that you go from, just to be trite, from being stuck to being somehow released. It does. I've never seen that actually work for anybody. It's a quick burst of, yeah, I did that. That felt really great. But then what do I actually do with that? And how do I sustain that over some period of time? So I think the idea of unsticking yourself is a good one, but then you have to have a follow-up to it, or where does that go?
Right. What do you do? Because I think about this a lot of times when I'm talking to people in business and just outside of business, is that part of me feels like people are either born with motivation or they're not. And you mentioned earlier in this segment that, you know, there are some things that you can learn. You know, you can teach, you know, the path of motivation. But what's the play between being able to learn motivation and having to just have it in you, you know, from birth? I mean, do those two collide at all?
I'm not a social scientist or anything, but I do feel like there are some people who just are born with a little more oomph, and I am not one of them. I am as average as they come. But for the rest of us, you know, it's all about whether it's find your purpose or do the Simon Sinek and find your why, or like in my case, it's pick something that you're interested in. Don't look for the passion. Just look for the, I'm interested in this. I would like to try that. And then commit to yourself that for a week and a half, say, you're actually going to work at it. So you can get through that initial phase that I discussed.
Yeah.
And start creating your own. So I do think there are some people born that way, but for the rest of it, it's something you have to find, and you can find it if you do the right things, and you don't even have to work at it. And that's the main point of my book.
So when you're finding the motivation, and when you're talking about being motivated, is it big and little things? I mean, is it being motivated to start a new business and go kill it in that business versus being motivated to go, you know, go lose weight or something? I mean, is it applicable to?
Sure. Yeah. Like, so let's take the start a business thing. And let's say that your goal is you want to build a $50 million business.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big goal. If that is your goal and that's all you think about, you will never find the motivation to get there, because it is so far from here to there. So you pick that goal, but then you focus largely on what are the steps it's going to take to get me there? Maybe it's talking to guys like you, or maybe it's wherever you're going to find your plan. And I have strategies for that in the book, but it's, you focus on your plan. I ended the book with basically, don't tell me your dreams, don't tell me your goals, tell me your plan, because the plan is what gets you there. And the plan is actually where your motivation comes from. If all you can think about is that goal, it's like the marathon example. 26 miles is a long way if you've never jogged. So if you go out today and you run your mile and you come home exhausted and you think about that 26 miles, you will never get there. It is too far. But if you, all you had to do today was run your mile, that was your plan, and you did it, you get to feel good about yourself because you did what you set out to do. And over time, you'll build on that. And at some point, you'll look back and say, wow, I've come pretty far. And you'll realize that the distance you have to go is just a matter of time and effort. So I don't know if that answered your question or not, but it is applicable to anything that you want to do that requires some effort and requires time. But time can be your friend. People get hung up on the idea of, wow, it's going to take me 6 months to train for a marathon. 6 months really isn't that long if you think about the scope of your life, especially if it's something big like that you wanted to accomplish. Let's say it takes a year, but you just want to run one. Okay, well, you devote a year of your life to that. You learn a lot about yourself. You go and do it. It's on your shelf. Well, you can be a serial achiever. You can go do something else. So that's the other thing about people get hung up on finding their passion. They think they have to find that one thing that will carry them through their entire lives.
Right.
But you don't. If you think about the people you work with, many of them have built multiple businesses. Right. They may have a business and they do something else on the side. They may have a business and they have a personal thing. You can be a serial achiever, and it's actually the fun way to go. And if you work on something for 10 years, get it to a certain point, and you say, you know, this is really cool, but I think I want to do something different. None of that time is wasted because it made you the person that you are who is then able to go on and take the next challenge. So serial achieving is a cool thing.
No, it's, very interesting concept. And when you're talking to people, you know, these successful people, and then when you were writing this book, are there certain challenges that are common for people who are trying to achieve things, can't seem to find the motivation? I mean, what gets in the way?
I think the biggest thing, if I think about what you just asked specifically in successful people, it's the comparing yourself to other people instead of comparing yourself to you and wherever you are now. So if I'm, I don't know, let's use Kirk Hammett, the guitarist. If I decide I want to learn to play guitar, if I compare myself to Kirk, that's pretty demotivating. I will never feel like I'll be that. But if I work at it and compare myself to where I was a month ago, I get to feel really good. And so Kirk, the thing that struck me with Kirk when he was talking about, he had played guitar for a while when he was young, put it away, went off and saw like a Jimi Hendrix documentary and came home and looked at his guitar and said, you know, I want to play you better. Like he's speaking to the guitar.
Yeah.
That's been his entire goal his whole life. It's I want to play better. Not I want to be Jimi Hendrix. Not I want to do whatever. Not I want to be, you know, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, although he is. I want to play better.
Right.
So he's comparing himself to himself. And if I think about the successful people I've talked to, that's what they do. Venus Williams. Yeah. She goes out and tries to beat people. But when she talked to me, she's like, you know, I'm focused on, am I better today than I was yesterday? Because if I do that, I will beat people. You know, that the winning is a byproduct of me being better.
Yeah, no, that makes all the sense.
Comparisons are killers in a variety of ways, not just in terms of motivation, but also happiness, because there will always be somebody bigger, stronger, faster, wealthier, better looking, always.
Better looking than us? Come on.
Yes, me. Not you.
No, that rings so true. The comparison to other people, you know, comparing yourself to the Joneses never works, you know, but I could see taking stock of where you are now. And then, like you said, focusing on the journey kind of methodically, step by step, it's all kind of adding up to me.
Yeah. If one of your clients compares himself to, say, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, in terms of wealth,
right,
you're gonna lose. But if he looks back and says, wow, I started this 15 years ago, and look at this, and not only the what I've built financially, but also the, you know, I have employees that I'm providing a living for employees and their families, and I'm, you know, there's all kinds of fulfillment. And if you think about that, if you're that person, that is a really cool thing.
Yeah.
You don't have to be Zuckerberg because you get to be you.
Yep.
So that's the key. You don't want to be the next somebody else. You just want to be the next you.
Yep. No, I love it. I love it. Now what has the book changed anything for you, Jeff? I mean, like going forward now, the book's out. Are you getting busier doing stuff centered around the book, or what's next?
It actually comes out on January 9th. I'm not sure when this will air. I have another one kind of in the works, but we haven't settled it. But the way publishing is now, there is a heavy reliance on authors to help promote and market their work from the publishing houses. And mine made a significant investment in me and in the book. And so I like to come through. So there's been a ton of me sitting and talking about this, which is very odd because I'm used to being behind the scenes and writing things that other people do. And now I have to be me. So I would much rather be you.
You're famous now.
No, I don't think so. but that has been a definite growth process, is that ability to sit and talk about your ideas and say, you know, this is me, because I am used to being, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting contrast, you know, going from one side to the other.
And interesting is a gentle way to put it. But I'm working at it.
You're doing great. You're doing great. Yeah, so the book comes out early January. Is it coming out everywhere?
Wherever fine books are sold. I've always wanted to say that.
I love it. Well,
And there's even an audiobook version, but I didn't do the audiobook because nobody wants to hear my nasal southern twang for like whatever 4 hours.
Well, it's great. I mean, I could talk to you for hours about this subject and go into deeper dives on stuff. Maybe we'll save that for another show. But Jeff, I want to say thanks so much for coming on. Really, really great talking to you, and appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Okay, you're welcome. All right. Until next time, we'll see you, everybody. Bye.